Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. On this episode, we have a lot of franchise news, reviews, a little movie innuendo, and as The Dark Knight turns 10, we discuss vigilantes. Why do we love them, and are they actually justified in what they do? Now, here we go. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today are my fellow hosts. Well, actually, John cannot be here. He had a personal issue that was unavoidable. So in his stead, coming back from his self-imposed retirement, our whole cruise director, Brian Williams, is returning.
Hey, hey, glad to be back.
that didn't sound so... He's like, hey, hey, glad to be back.
Good to be here.
Sounds about right. Welcome to her first episode as an official host, Amanda Sink.
Hello, hello.
I hope we're not going to do that every week.
We are.
We should probably work on something else. Yeah. Even Brian's like, yeah.
All right. Well, if Brian says so, then I'll do it.
All right.
That's all it takes.
He's already
More people
tired.
Should take that advice.
It's probably not always good advice, but...
No, it works. It works. All right. Well, we're going to get into some stuff, but first we got to mention the podcast awards because until July 31st, if you're listening to this after that, don't worry about that. Just keep listening. But if you're listening before July 31st, we're actually nominated for we're trying to be finalists in the podcast awards this year. So if you go to podcastawards.com, you can vote for the Hollywood Outsider in both the People's Choice and TV and film categories. That's podcastawards.com. If you need any more details, go to thehollywoodoutsider.com. We got a whole post for it to help you find that, as well as some other podcasts like Smirk for Society and Culture, Gaming Outsider for Games. So thank you. If you can, really appreciate it. Takes just a few seconds. I promise it doesn't take long. All you got to do is do a quick little sign up so they can verify you're not a fake bot, and then you can vote for us. Yay.
Yay. It's super easy.
Super easy.
Yeah.
Super
Brian, easy. Have you done it?
47 times.
You have a lot of emails.
Yeah. Once per email address. Brian's got a private life. And if you don't, because we do have a lot of newer listeners, if you don't recognize Brian because he hasn't been on the show for a while, you have to roll back to, I think, episode 239 or before. Because he's a founding member, and he was on all those episodes. So if you want a whole lot of pausing,
and
go back.
A lot of sass.
Lots of sass. Mm-hmm. I back that sass up.
The trailer park. You back it up into the trailer park.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't done that in a while. We retired that with Brian. Yeah. I forgot. Brian's trailer park. That's it. All right, well, let's move into some movie and TV news, some franchise news first, and I'm just going to do it all at once because I don't want to have to do this one by one. Zombieland 2 is confirmed with the original cast. RoboCop's getting another reboot, and Neil Blomkamp is going to be behind that. Downton Abbey is getting his own movie. Not his. It's a whole thing.
It's an it's.
Sorry.
It's they, them. Okay.
So you're a big fan, huh?
I'm huge in the Abbey. Yeah, but it's getting its own movie, so good for them, those fans, I guess. All of them are pretty excited.
But is that really even necessary?
I think the fans are like, they were excited. They were ecstatic. So for those guys that love that show, I think yes. So all who right. is excited about any of this other news, Amanda?
Zombieland 2.
With the original cast.
Yeah, with the original cast, which is probably the only way it would be great. But man, I hope we get a new set of rules, and I hope there's a lot of attitude and... I feel like the movie wasn't necessarily about zombies. It felt like it was more about the funny,
I mean,
witty
it's called
dialogue.
Zombie Land.
I know, but the zombies weren't really like the focus of it. It was more about making you laugh and I don't know. I at least didn't focus on it. I was laughing and paying attention to the rules. Cardio.
Brian, you love this movie. Do you want another one?
Well, I mean, in fairness, my love of this movie kind of started that I found out very, very late in the process, but it was actually part of it was actually filmed here where I live in South Georgia. So to see the roller coasters and stuff that I've ridden on before, you know, in a really you have to point on a map where I'm at, basically. So nobody really knows this place. So to kind of see this little, this little theme park on the big screen was pretty neat. So that was really my big draw to it. And I don't know. I'm not, I don't like Emma Stone like a lot of people do. I think she's a very overrated, I guess.
You want her Oscar revoked?
Wow.
I know you're going to get some emails tomorrow.
No, you are. It's Brian at the Hollywood Outsider. That better still work. I don't know if it's we're going to forward them there.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. She's just one of those people that, I've never really latched on to. And this is the only role that I like Jesse Eisenberg in. And
really, really? This is a poor guy. He's been in like 1,000 movies. Brian's like, yeah, he's got one. I've only seen one.
Well, this, the neurotic quirkiness, it really fits this role. It doesn't fit Lex Luthor. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. Everybody agrees with, even he agrees with that, whether he realizes it or not. He knows he's wrong for that part.
Woody, I'm getting a little bit of Woody Harrelson fatigue.
I thought you were going to say Woody fatigue. And that was
just, yeah, I know. I started
easy. Too easy.
Yeah, too easy. So, I'm getting tired of the wood, just so you know.
So you really just don't, you're not a fan of the entire cast, it sounds like, at this point. Every single person you've been like, not really a big fan.
Sounds like Gran Torino at Zombieland.
Now, the parts individually, not as much, but the group as a whole, yes. There is, you know, I do like Abigail Breslin, so there is the, you know, the
really,
one out of the
really?
Four.
That's
out
the
of one, all of them, that's who you choose?
That's the one you lean to, is Abigail Breslin?
It's just one of those things Woody Harrelson is popping up in movies he shouldn't be popping up in. He's distracting in Star Wars and in these other big tentpole movies, and it's a distraction for me. It's not that he's necessarily bad, it's just he's not a good fit for it. So I'm just kind of a little burned out with Woody Harrelson right now. It's not that I don't like him, I just,
I want to go to RoboCop 2 because I'm glad you guys are, I'm excited for Zombieland 2. I think the internet is just going losing their mind. I really didn't think they'd get the whole team together because Emma Stone, while I agree she's not the most fantastic thing in the world like some people think she is, I don't dislike her. I just think she's kind of overhyped a little bit. Maybe not overrated, just overhyped. But Neil Blomkamp, I love him as a director. He's underrated in my opinion. I blame the casting that ruined Chappie. I actually thought the movie could have been really good if they didn't have those crazy South African rappers as the leads. That was really bad. But I like Elysium. I love District 9, and he's going to helm a new RoboCop. Even though we just had one like 8 minutes ago, I don't care. I want another one. Bring it.
He's good. He makes it interesting because honestly, without the information that I have about this one, I wasn't extremely interested when I first heard it. And then I heard he was going to be attached to it. And the production of it is it's going to be set in Detroit. And so I think that'll make for an interesting.
Well, they've all been set in Detroit.
I know, but I mean with him in particular, having it set in Detroit. Because I feel like he's able to be a bit controversial and kind of step
and make Detroit seem worse.
No, but he's going to be taking on a cop that is noted for brutality, and it's based in Detroit, which is noted for a lot of, you know, malicious
positive
acts.
Things like a wonderful football team.
Right. And yeah, that awesome team that lost like 2 seasons in a row.
Wow.
But anyway,
that got real.
So I think it'll be interesting. I'm at least intrigued just by that information. When just hearing that RoboCop was doing it, I wasn't.
I for whatever reasons, and I don't have a good reason for this, I've always loved RoboCop. It's kind of silly in a way, but there is a certain cool factor about him. I don't know. I'm not excited about Blomkamp. Because I'm just scared that I'm going to get another preachy movie about whatever social issues he wants to tackle in this. And that's the only thing I'm really kind of worried about. I don't want to be preached at for 2 hours. You know, if you're throwing subtle stuff, like Richard Donner was really good at it in the Lethal Weapon movies. Mm-hmm. They would have conversations going on, and just in the background of the police station or something, there'd be a poster that says, you know, stop apartheid or be nice to animals or something like that.
Don't eat the tuna.
Right. You know, and there were commentaries throughout and stuff. And yes, the original RoboCop is a satire for a lot of different issues. But it was, you know, just on the, it wasn't in your face. And I think Blomkamp tends to get a little bit more in your face than I want when I, whatever, spend $10, $15 on a ticket to go see a movie. I want to be entertained. I don't want to be preached to.
Well, what I want at this point, now that we've reached the end of this article or these articles, I want a Downton Abbey movie with the Zombieland 2 cast directed by Blomkamp, and I want RoboCop to come walking through.
All right.
Let's just, cool. Okay.
Sold. See?
That's what we need to do. Everything is about franchises. I was looking at like the summer catalog. Every single weekend has a major sequel or franchise film. I'm like, if you're going to do a franchise, let's go crazy. Let's just do it up.
Let's do them all in one movie.
Do them all at once and have them have British accents. I'm good with it.
That would be really interesting to
it'd be
see
horrible.
All of those cast members
horrible,
attempting it.
But I would watch that.
Oh, don't worry. Abigail Breslin will do fantastic.
Right. That cast, I don't know about, but Abigail Breslin, boy. Her stint on Scream Queens really turned a corner. Joss Whedon.
I say one thing positive, and all of a sudden, she's the new Chloe Grace Moretz.
Oh, she is.
No,
oh,
she's not.
This is going
to
be good.
No, don't harken back to that old one. Joss Whedon's returning to TV with an HBO deal.
Yeah!
For a show called The Nevers. Easy killer. With a show called The Nevers. Is this going to make television even better to have Whedon back?
Well, nobody... Netflix is about the only studios that are or channels, whatever you want to call it, that are doing quality television like HBO is. And it's really just the two of them at this point. So, yeah, it's going to make it better, or it's just going to continue to make it better than pretty much everybody else on your television. So it's about as it sounds fairly interesting. I'm not sure what abilities we're talking about here yet, but basically it's a gang of Victorian women with unusual abilities, relentless enemies, and a mission that might change the world.
So it's a Joss Whedon show?
Yeah, it's a Joss Whedon show.
Yeah.
That's all I need is his
so
name.
So what do y'all think? Do y'all think it's vampires? You think it's, I don't know, mutant abilities? Or?
I don't think it's vampires. I think he made his way with vampires, and I don't really expect him to go back to that route. I think he wanted to leave that for a reason, and he's really touched on a lot of different types of things that are outside of that. So I think it'll be something, or I'm hoping that it's something a little bit more creative and not just basic and surface level like vampires or just something like superhero type things.
Swearwolves. I want swearwolves.
Swearwolves?
Yep. Nobody saw that movie. That's too bad. All right. What Happened in the Shadows? No? No one?
I forgot about that movie.
Yeah, swearwolves. That's what I want. Anyway, I would love werewolves because I think it's not done enough. And he's done vampires and he's done whatever the hell Dollhouse was. So let's go ahead and do some vampires.
Yeah.
Cool.
He checks my box. Wait, that was dirtier than I thought.
That came out wrong. But we're glad to have the old Whedon back on TV.
Yes.
You know what? That brings up. I used to watch the Joss Whedon shows during the summer because I had a lot of more free time in the summer. And so that's when I would catch up on Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and I loved Angel, and da-da-da. And speaking of summer, made me think of movies, summer movies. We're midway through the summer movie season, and I don't have a single summer jam in my head to get me through the rest of it from some movie soundtrack, because that's always been a thing. Every year you get, like, some at least one or two big songs. I think it was last year or the year before it was Happy, you know, whatever. I don't have any. And the last year was the Justin Timberlake one. What was that one? From Trolls, or was that last year?
Oh, something about dancing. Yeah. That's a good one.
Well, yeah. I mean, all you really need to do is throw in dancing.
But
and
I got
Justin
nothing.
Timberlake song.
That's true. That is fair. I got nothing this year. So, Amanda, give me some of your favorite music memories. Let's all share some of our favorite movie soundtrack memories. And you can tell us the songs you love from movies that summer that just got you going. Come on.
So.
Make this upbeat. I'm going to sing mine. I will. I don't care.
Well, why don't you start with your singing?
No, you're first.
And then we'll lead into it.
No.
All right. First and foremost, everyone knows this song. Everybody loves the song. Everybody can sing along to it, even if they weren't alive when it came out. All right?
Okay.
Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
I need you guys to join in with me, though.
No, that's probably not going to happen.
It's going to happen.
I don't know the song. I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
When there's something strange in your neighborhood, who you gonna call?
Ghostbusters.
If there's something weird and it don't look good. Who you gonna call?
Ghostbusters.
I ain't afraid of no ghost.
Okay, we got it. You don't have to do the whole song.
Just no, just that's a good part of it, though.
Yeah. Is that one you still love?
Absolutely. I listen to it. I have it on one of my Halloween playlists, because in October, I just replay creepy Halloween songs.
You consider that one creepy?
No, but it's on there. But I regularly have it playing through my other playlists as well. And it's just fun to jam out. Sometimes I'll just turn it on the highway and like crack the windows a little bit and start singing it to random people who I'm driving past or at a stoplight with.
It's an odd day.
It's fun. People will sing in with it because they know the song.
That's true. There's probably somebody listening and was like, Ghostbusters.
They're opening their sunroof and they're doing it themselves.
And some other guy's like, would you guys shut up with the songs? I don't need that joy.
So that's my first one, and okay. It's exceptional.
All right. It's a good one. It's a good one. I'll give you that one.
All right. Second one, and I'm pretty sure you guys can figure this out, but I'm not going to tell you. You have to guess.
Okay.
Here come the men in black.
Really? We got a guess there?
I was joking. I wasn't being sarcastic that you guys weren't going to figure it out.
I think you don't understand how sarcasm
Maybe I should have just said Galaxy Defenders, sang that part. Would you have figured it out if I would have just said that?
I mean, yeah.
Galaxy Defenders.
Wow.
What is it?
Man, you already said the title, so technically it's been answered.
Who's it by?
Will Smith.
All right.
Will Smith.
Just
yeah.
checking. Just checking. Seeing if you should be on the show
I
or not.
I thought it was DJ Jazzy Jeff. My bad.
My third one, and this will be my last one.
Okay.
Because I have plenty of others, but narrowing it down to songs that were original to movies that were released in the summer was pretty difficult for me.
Okay.
So the last one, and I will preface this by saying it is one of the few Tom Cruise movies that I do enjoy.
Ooh, we got a hint, Brian.
Shut your mouth. Don't say it.
Don't knock the Cruise. Brian ain't having that.
I'm saying I like this movie.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
Highway to... No, that was really bad.
What just
Highway
happened?
To the Danger Zone. I can't do it.
Somewhere cats are howling right now.
I'm not Kenny Loggins. I can't do it.
Dog
Why
just
do you
died.
Have such a really good cat meow? That wasn't as good as before. Anyway, Highway to the Danger Zone.
Or just Danger Zone.
Or just Danger Zone.
I went to the
Danger Zone. What is that? Was you're a judging
cat,
my voice.
That was a cat singing Danger Zone.
Better than I did.
Yeah. Top Gun.
Yeah.
I can't wait to not see the sequel because Miles Teller said it. Oh, those are good ones. I'm surprised you actually know. I mean, you're younger than Brian and I. We're old timers. So that's
I totally could have thrown in, like, Come On, Eileen, which was in Perks of Being a Wallflower, but it wasn't original for
it.
Wasn't
but
you
original.
Should absolutely put that on your summer playlist if you don't have it. It's
Come
the best
on,
song.
Eileen. Dun, 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 dun.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
the only part you
top,
know.
Top 10 songs of all time.
Wow.
Top one.
Or top one. Brian, what about you? What are some summer movie songs? What kind of songs get you in the mood?
Wow. Well, I'll lead off with the Mr. Cruise movie, and she scared me there for a second because I thought she was about to steal mine. And it actually plays in perfectly with my travel agency, which is wanderstrucktravel.com.
Shameless so people, plug.
Just for you people out there who aren't familiar with it, you can find me on Facebook. That's probably the easiest way to do it. And
what's your email?
We've also got a cruise that we're setting up for next year. So there's not a whole lot of rooms left, maybe 8 or 9.
What's your email address?
Or you can just email me at Brian, that's Brian, at wanderstruck.
All right, you whore, will you move on? Wanderstrucktravel.com, right? We got it.
We've all got it by now. It's in our bookmarks.
Well, so as I said, Tom Cruise, the movie Cocktail. Aruba, Jamaica. Ooh, I want to take you to Bermuda, Bahama. Come on, pretty mama. Key Largo, Montego. Baby, why don't we go?
I'm not doing the rest. I can't.
Of the Florida Keys.
I'm gonna take that piece of audio and keep it with me forever.
Just set it as your text alert or
yes.
something.
Anytime I get a message about the Hollywood Outsider, it's going to have that.
You know what's sad? I don't know the name of that song.
Kokomo.
Kokomo, yes.
By the Beach Boys.
Yes. Oh, my God. I remember that movie sucked, but I really love that song.
Now.
Okay. That movie, I just rewatched it not too long ago. I was at a hotel and it was playing. And other than the magical bottle wavering or moving around, shaking or whatever, it's not a good movie.
I like it. So, you know what? You can just step off.
Okay. Fair enough. Now, I'm glad that we both sang the entire Kokomo song.
I am too.
What else you got, B?
Oh, wow. Let's see here. Well, one that took place in y'all's sort of hometown of Chicago. And it's an old song, but whenever you watch this movie, it sticks with you. And that's Twist and Shout in Ferris Bueller's
yes.
Day Off.
Yes.
Shake it a baby now.
It is. You listen to it and it just sticks with you.
So. And if there was a parade and that played, I would try to jump on the float.
Absolutely. You and probably a couple other 100,000 people.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth getting arrested for, I think.
And that's really all I got. So we'll keep moving on.
Okay, well, I got a couple, like, I love summer movie songs. You ready for these?
I really hope. There's one that I am really hoping you pick.
There's one that's an easy one. I'll knock that out real quick. Jim West, Desperado, Rough Rider. No, you don't want none of this. Six Gun of this. Brother Running this. Buffalo Soldier. Look, it's like I told you.
Huh? Wild Wild West.
That's not the one I thought you were going to go with.
Well, too bad.
I hope the second one is.
You know what? Probably not. That was an easy one. So Brian got that one. Wild Wild West. Here's a harder one. I know Brian will know this song. I don't know if you will, Amanda. Shine sweet freedom, shine your light on me. You are the magic. Yeah? You know what I'm talking about, right?
You're right where I want to be. Yep. Shine sweet freedom.
Running Scared, 1986. These are all 80s movies, so if that helps.
Okay. Michael McDonald.
Dude, a great one. Now, here's what my... I love this movie. I don't care. I mean, I know a lot of critics hated it, but this is a big one for me. Shake down, break down, take down. Everybody wants it to the crowded land. Break down, take down. You're busted. Right? Let down your guard, honey. Just about to tear everything and it's all right.
It's all right. Break down.
He's like your backup vocalist at this point.
How many people have already quit this podcast? They're like skipping ahead.
I realized the song that I was really hoping you would do is not a summer one.
Oh.
Bummer. Yeah. Man, it's the perfect song for you to sing.
But did you know this song is really what I'm asking?
No.
Shakedown, Bob Seger.
Nope.
Beverly Hills Cop 2. Dose.
I'm sure I've heard it. I just don't know the words.
As far as I'm concerned, the end of the Beverly Hills Cop series. Because
sorry, Judge Reinhold just wasn't strong enough to carry it from there.
All right. Now, here's my... This is my... Well, let's see. I actually have two more. I'm sorry, but...
You really created a list.
I love summers. Man, I was sitting there thinking like, wow, we don't have these anymore. And we need the... This could have been a whole topic, but whatever. All right. My creation. Is it real? It's my creation. I do not know. I can't sing like him.
No. Oingo Boingo.
Yes. Oingo Boingo. Weird Science. Weird Science.
Science.
From my heart and from my hand. Why don't people understand my intentions? All right. So my favorite summer song. This is my favorite all time summer movie song. Okay. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It's a hard one.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. It's like two parts. And that's I'm hoping I can nail it. I'm hoping I can get it. Fair enough. All right, here we go.
Is that what you said about the picture you received the other day?
Here we go. Ahem. See that, Strebeck. We're just in time. We have stumbled into a major crime. They got the girl all frightened. Now, that's not nice. I think she's the subject of a sacrifice. Buddy, we're putting this party on ice. But first, you know, we really ought to read them their rights. Read them their rights. Read them their rights. Nobody? Nobody?
I know it. I just don't know what it's from.
Is that the Dragnet?
Yes.
Dragnet, Tom Hanks and...
City of Crime.
Yep.
People don't realize Tom Hanks did a rap song.
I've heard it. I've not heard you do it, so that was an interesting twist.
Sorry, everybody listening. We wanted to have a little fun and lighten.
I feel like for the good graces of people, you should still sing "Lose Yourself" from Eminem.
No, it's not a summer movie.
You should, but you can put it on your summer playlist.
I'll come back when we do like winter songs.
We're we're going to do Christmas and you're just going to bust in Eminem.
I'm going to lose myself in the music in the moment. I'll own it. I'm never going to let it go. All right. Moving on. I hope you guys enjoyed that. Please let us know your summer movie songs. I'd love to know. I love to hear what people love to hear. And then I'm going to throw them all in my Spotify list and just jam out to movie music because we don't have it anymore. We don't have anything. It's kind of pissing me off a little bit.
I think we still have good songs. They're just not originals for the movies.
Yeah, but that's part of what I loved about soundtracks for so many years. They had movie songs. Songs made for those movies that really fit the movie.
And then you had the music videos that accompanied them that – you know, in the 80s and of course the 90s too, it was all really good. You just don't have that anymore.
Back when MTV actually showed music television.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then everything just got dark. Speaking of, let's move on to the darkness. On July 18th, 2008, The Dark Knight turned 10 years old. This is the movie that was both a monster hit as well as was forever clouded to some.
That was actually a pretty decent impression.
You're welcome.
Maybe not that part, okay. But the beginning part was pretty decent.
Well, this is a movie that was it was a huge hit, monster hit, as well as forever clouded to some people, the DC universe, by making their films very dark, very gritty. So that said, none of the films were as well received either critically or commercially as this one was, including Dark Knight Rises, Batman vs. Superman, Suicide Squad. None of them were appraised like this. So what makes The Dark Knight so damn special? Brian, what makes this movie stand the test of time?
Well, this really shouldn't be too long of a discussion because the bottom line is it's got the greatest villain in comic book cinema history, plain and simple.
Across the board, you're saying for every kind of film, best villain ever?
Well, in comic book cinema.
All right.
So, arguably you could make a fairly strong argument that maybe the best villain ever. Nobody talks about Christian Bale. They're always anybody that talks about this movie mentions the Joker. The complexities of his schemes and the mind games. You watch him doing one thing, but it's actually just kind of a ruse for whatever else his goal is later on. And really, also the story just had more. The story was larger than like the eye candy and the pizzazz. So it was just one of those things to where it was a damn near perfect movie.
Agreed. Seriously. That franchise in general, because I love the Batman Begins too, but when it comes to The Dark Knight, they captured comic book superhero without making it enjoyable for everyone, without making it like how our superhero movies are now, which is what Brian kind of touched on in terms of what I'm, referring to. The way that the story became one of the larger elements in the performances over the action sequences. Now, they still had great action sequences, but it wasn't the focus of the movie, which a lot of our superhero movies now, it's just about the big bang on screen.
Mm-hmm.
It's
set piece after set piece.
Yeah, and that's really all it is. And not to say that The Dark Knight didn't have it, but it had substantial performances. Heath Ledger was outstanding. I mean, seriously, one of the most outstanding performances I've ever seen in a movie. Christian Bale, I loved him. I know I'm not the majority who are like, this is one of the best Batmans, if not the best, but he still held that movie together the way that it needed to be held together, especially with his Bruce. And I feel like the way that they took the movie and they made it more about, we're going to make a great film versus we're going to make a really good superhero movie is really what separated it from the rest.
The thing really stands out to me in terms of The Dark Knight is how well crafted of a film it is. I've probably seen that 30 times since it came out in 10 years, if not more.
Mm-hmm.
There are times where I think I like it more upon that amount of rewatches than I did when I first saw it. I just appreciate different things for it. It really goes against the grain of what most superhero movies are. Like, the hero kind of screws up a lot in terms of the movie. Like, he makes a lot of bad calls and, he saves some people at the end and he kind of seems like he won, but he didn't really win and he ultimately kind of loses. The Joker kind of wins. The Joker doesn't have any real... The thing I love about the Joker, and this is one reason why I'm not looking forward to Joaquin Phoenix's origin story for the Joker movie that they're doing is I don't want a backstory. I don't want to know his story. Mm-hmm. That's what I love about that particular character is I don't know anything about him other than whatever he lies about. He just wants to, just like Michael Caine said, he just wants to see the world burn. That's fantastic to me. And the movie is really not, like you said, both of you said, it's not really a comic booky. It's not really a superhero movie so much as it is Heat with De Niro and Pacino. I know they mm-hmm. made it in the vein of Heat, but really it's them with cowls on and with a suit on. I mean, it's really, that's all it is. It's really Heat amped up with costumes on. And I find that fascinating. It's just like, it's tried to be emulated so many times since, never has it been duplicated.
And that actually is probably one of the things that you can point to know that this is an incredible film, is that people have tried to do it and then they don't succeed. Because whenever you have someone or something that tries to emulate or copycat something that's already been produced and was very successful, it's because they recognize that. And when you can kind of compare and contrast with other replicas and you see it doesn't even come close. Seriously, to me, this may be my personal opinion, but there's not another Batman movie that or Joker character who before or after The Dark Knight has really just iconicized it like The Dark Knight did at all.
And speaking of that, can we want to follow it up a little bit? Can we all agree that I guess we can all agree, based on what we've seen, that the DC films haven't won over fans, at least. They haven't won over the public, the great public, like Marvel's take has. So, I mean, even though I really like those movies, but most people would say that, most of the public would say that DC has failed in many ways or has fallen short in some ways. It's obvious they were trying to replicate this success because they were trying to make a darker, more dour tale that they could never replicate, like we talked about. So were they wrong to even try that take? Brian, do you think they were wrong to even try that? Or do you give them credit for at least trying their own vision?
Yeah, I mean, somebody or some people had a plan and, you know, they went after it. You gotta give some kind of credit to that. It sucks when we're disappointed as fans because we had big hopes. And after a slew of Marvel movies, you kind of figure it, okay, now there's a template. We know what works. We also appreciate you going a different route. You want to be a little darker. They're brighter and shinier. You want to be a little darker. We get it. The execution is what we're disappointed in. And I don't think anybody's really upset with the ideas that they've thrown out. It's just, I think it's really just got to do with the execution.
It, to me, a lot of those feel like they're good movies, but they're missing an ingredient to make them fantastic movies or to really continue to draw you in. Not to say that I don't like them because I do enjoy them, but Marvel has seemed to find their sweet spot. They know what their audiences are looking for and they've played on that. So while they have different movies, they have a very similar line between them. So you can distinctly look at it and say, this is a Marvel movie. DC has tried to do that visually, but in their story and in their, as Brian said, execution, they haven't mastered that. They're trying to get that craft together. And I respect them for trying, but I think after a few times of it not working, you should maybe try to figure out what will instead of doing the same thing over and over again. Because you don't want them to duplicate what Marvel has done. You don't want them to be Marvel because then it's just the same thing, but for a different superhero. You want them to be able to master to in themselves. Yeah, yeah. To separate themselves.
Create their identity, I guess.
Exactly. But they don't seem to be in a place where I know they're trying, but they just kind of seem to be going in like a loop where they're not really getting out of what the issue is. And I can't say what that missing ingredient is. I've tried to figure it out myself, but it just feels like there's a puzzle piece that they don't have that they're working to find, and they just can't find it. So
I can tell them what it is, or my opinion what it is. It's hope. It's absolutely hope. They don't – you can make a darker universe. You can make you can make a grittier palette, whatever you want to do, but you have to have some semblance of hope because of that's the movie – movies that they are. Comic book movies inherently are about heroes rising to the occasion, overcoming, you know,
insurmountable odds.
Exactly. That's what they're about. Even The Dark Knight, as dark as that movie is, had hope in it. It did have hope. Batman never gave up. He kept going. He even sacrificed himself to make Harvey Dent look good at the end. You know, he did all of those things because he believed in the city. He had a belief and a positive message. That's where I think they're missing in some of these movies, is they forget to include the hope. And Wonder Woman's a prime example. That movie had hope and abundance, and it succeeded. And it's just that's really what I think DC needs to find. And now I would disagree. I don't think they're in a loop right now. They're in like a rose bush because they're just branching all these crazy ideas. We're going to make two Joker movies. Why? Why would you do that?
That's true.
It confuses the hell out of everyone. It doesn't make any sense to me.
It seems like they're flustered. They're not sure how to – they want to be as successful as Marvel is, but they haven't found how to incorporate hope to the same –
they need to kidnap Kevin Feige and take him into a room and, like, I don't know, Clockwork Orange's ass and say, how do we do this? How do we fix it? Or something.
Yeah. Instead of
– not literally.
Instead of – it seems every – it doesn't really seem like there's a team effort. There just seems to be like, okay, this person has an idea. They're going to run with it. You know, speaking in terms of your branching out thing, one person has an idea, they run with it. Another person has an idea, they run with it. But they're not really all working together to brand DC. You know, DC was already branded from the comics.
They were. I think they got away from – they're getting away from it now.
I agree. Yeah. Once you started saying that, I agree with you. Absolutely.
That's too bad. Yeah, I still like most of those movies. I just wish they had a message of hope. That's all I
But I mean, Superman has messages of hope.
No, but they squash it before it ever has a chance to really carry you through the movie. And I think they did in Justice League, even though a lot of people poo-poo that movie and it didn't do well financially. I actually thought they perfectly captured Superman in that movie.
That's true.
By the end.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. All right. Well, remember, you can always find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Join our Facebook group or on Twitter at BuyPopcorn. And I do want to say Dark Knight. I might watch it again this weekend, just because.
I might watch it tonight.
Dark Knight Rises? Not so much. No.
It's definitely not as good as Dark Knight.
No, it's not. Now we're going to move into one of our most interesting little side bits that we do just for fun. Movie innuendo. Amanda, take it away.
Woot woot. Okay. So each of the hosts...
Can I stop you? We do not woot woot. This is your first full time. I understand. But don't you ever woot woot again.
Woot. We'll just go with one singular.
No, no.
I got the veto.
We will not go with any. We have a woot embargo.
Hooray!
No.
Yay!
No. Let's bring it down. Let's bring it down. All right. Let's go to the movie innuendo. Let's get this going. Let's get this going.
Ew. So each of the hosts are going to choose two innocent lines from the movie, which we've chosen Die Hard, and we're going to deliver them as sexually.
You even said that naughty.
And we're going to deliver them as sexually as we possibly can. Each host at the very end is going to vote on who they think has done so the most effectively, and that person will be deemed the winner of sexual movie innuendo. All right, AP, you can start.
Oh, I'm going for
you're going first. Put you on the spot.
Oh, she moved it up. She shook it up.
So we're shuffling things around.
We sure are.
All right, here we go. You ready? It's Die Hard. Sexual innuendo. Here I go. You should have heard your brother squeal when I broke his freaking neck.
I don't know if that's violent or sexual or a little bit of both.
Really depends on the safe word.
All right, Brian.
I'm Agent Johnson. This is Special Agent Johnson.
That's a good one.
All right.
That is good. It will blow you through the back wall of the theater. That's the tagline of the movie, in case you were wondering.
Okay. All right.
Back to you, Aaron.
All right. Let's see. Let's see if I can naughty this up. I'm just hoping people understand why I think it's naughty. All right. Son of a bitch. Fist with your toe.
Gross. Ew.
It hit
the visual.
It hits you late.
I'm just going to predict that one might not win. All right. Woo. Now I know what a TV dinner feels like.
What?
What just happened?
Feeling full?
That was John McClane when he was in the...
No,
the
I know the line.
Oh, what? Did you get excited?
Yeah. Probably the other way around. You know? All right, Amanda, last one.
Last one. Isn't this my second?
Yeah, there's only two.
Oh, that's right. There is two. I can't read.
Counting's not your strong suit, is it?
It's not. 'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through the house, not a creature was stirring, except the four assholes coming in the rear.
That wins.
Also, that is a point to say that this is a Christmas movie.
My vote is for that last one, so Amanda, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because that was I'll agree with that, because that was on my short list also. I actually had it written down also.
Did you?
We
should have performed it together.
Well.
All right. Well, I'll take it. I'll be the winner.
You are the winner. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Woo.
Wait. Whoa. I can't do woo woo, but you can do woohoo?
Yeah.
Nah.
Boss. All right, before we get to what's this movie, I'm sorry. Before we move on to our spoiler-free reviews, we wanted to say thank you to our Patreon supporters. Once again, thank you to our Patreon supporters who donated graciously at patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. That's patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. There's lots of bonus content there. If you go sign up, you have immediate access to it. So please go check it out. All right, we have spoiler-free reviews. We have two movies. The first one is Skyscraper, which I saw. Amanda, you're the lead reviewer. Take it away.
All right, well, this is a very short explanation of what this movie is about, so you will definitely be elaborating. But Skyscraper, which stars Dwayne The Rock Johnson, is about a father who goes to great lengths to save his family from a burning skyscraper. Is there more to the plot than that, or is that...
Not really. No. He's basically a security expert. He's been called in to assess the security risks on the Pearl, which is the tallest building ever built. It's in Hong Kong. By its owner, and... He assesses it, and then what happens is he finds out, speaking of Die Hard, that he's embroiled in a terrorist takeover of the building. They light the building on fire, and then he has to find a way, because his family's inside the building, he's actually outside the building. He has to, A, find a way into the building, and then he has to find a way out of the building.
So it's San Andreas, but inside a building.
With towering inferno on top of it, correct.
Right.
Yep.
Wow. This is a selling point.
It is Die Hard mixed with Towering Inferno mixed with something that had a guy with a fake leg.
I mean, it's with that description, it sounds great. How was it, though, having, because from my understanding, with Neve Campbell, she's the leading lady, and she actually is the one who has to try to save The Rock from something?
No.
That's what he posted on his Twitter.
Well, he is wrong. Maybe he should stop promoting himself so much.
Well, how is it?
She's actually great in the movie. Neve Campbell plays his wife, and I haven't seen her in anything since, like, Scream 4. I honestly thought that movie must have scared her into retirement or something. But she's actually great. She kicks a lot of ass. She's a little beefed up in the top half. I don't know what happened since the last movie I saw her in. But she's great in that role. So I really, really enjoyed Neve Campbell. He gets in there to try to save her. She ends up saving the kids for the most part, but then he has to get one last kid out. It's complicated.
Oh, yeah?
But he does have to try to save the family. It's not all Neve Campbell. He does get them out of there, because the Rock ain't gonna let her do everything.
Right. Of course, he's the Rock. It sounds pretty predictable, but does it work for what it is?
No.
I mean, it's
it's good. It's kind of like, man, you're hungry and you want Mexican, and Taco Bell's nearby, you know? So you could have the really good Mexican meal, or you could have Taco Bell, and you're just like, man, I don't want to spend the money for the main course. I'm just going to go get Taco Bell. That's what Skyscraper is. It's the Taco Bell of Die Hard movies.
That is not a winning endorsement.
It's not a bad movie. It's just not good.
So by default, it's bad.
You have to have an average to have an above average and a below average. It's an average. It's very much an average movie. There are moments where I think that it's really cool. There are actually the scenes on the – when he's scaling – everybody's seen the commercial, I think, by now, where he's climbing the crane to try to jump into the building. The movie's ludicrous, okay? So just check your brain at the door. In fact, just throw it at the door. But that moment where he's actually climbing that crane is terrifying. I'm not even, like, really terrified of heights, but the way they shot it was terrifying. I think if you're actually afraid of heights, it would freak you out.
Oh.
But – the majority of the rest of it is just bland, very bland. The Rock has, I mean, the one thing they don't do is they don't embrace the fun of these movies. Like, you're making a movie like this, embrace the fun of it. Instead, they take themselves way too seriously. The Rock is not given any quips. They're just not utilizing. I mean, if you want to branch him out and he's trying to create a more sympathetic character, I get that. But he very much is the Rock, and he's the Rock not being the Rock. So by about the halfway point, you're like, could you say something entertaining? Because you're just, his dialogue's like, look out. Oh boy. My family, you know, stuff like that. So, yeah, it was very average.
Is he trying to start a war with my family, or?
I think he already started one. Yeah. That's behind the scenes. We don't do that here.
So if this one was average, do you give it $5, or what was your score on it?
My score is $5. $10 full price for Mission. I give Skyscraper $5. It's a movie that I think people, like, Brian, this is one of those, you're watching TNT like 3 in the morning, and this comes on, and you end up watching it till 5 in the morning. It's one of those movies. But you don't, gotcha. Like, go look for it.
Okay.
Right.
Good to know.
Mm-hmm. But it's not Armageddon. It's not stupid and stupid and stupid, but still amazing in so many ways. It's not like that.
It's average.
No, Armageddon is amazing. It's like a 10 out of 10. No,
Saint Skyscraper is average.
Yes, very much so.
Deep breaths.
Yeah. Ooh, somebody's about to get fired real quick.
I know. Right? He just started. I mean, I don't want to miss a thing. But all right.
Oh, my God.
Let's go to how it ends, Brian. You're the lead on this one. Hopefully you remember what you're supposed to do.
Hey, Amanda, this is how it's done.
I would also like to point out, it does.
Nope.
It says to include quick synopsis and the score of the film.
We're done here. So we've already moved on.
That's
you
the
need
same
to catch
person
up.
Doing that.
Brian? Nope.
It also says Amanda, lead.
Yeah, I led him into telling me the synopsis.
You led into failure.
Led us off a cliff. So, all right, how it ends on Netflix. A futuristic disaster turns the country into a war zone, and a young lawyer heads west with the future father-in-law to find his fiance. Have both of you guys seen this movie?
I know,
Amanda,
not.
You have.
I have, just yeah.
Amanda. Okay. What drew you to this movie?
The trailer looked interesting. Also wanted to review something for the Hollywood Outsider on the website, so that worked out. And
free!
Convenient. Yeah, it is free. It's convenient. But, I mean, in the trailer, it genuinely looks interesting. The production looks like it was well-designed. And it's Netflix. Netflix originals very rarely let me down.
Yeah. I mean, Netflix does some pretty good stuff. I guess, what were you anticipating? What type of movie were you kind of thinking you were getting into? Was it more, do you think it was more of a Book of Eli, or because this guy was in the Divergent series and it's a post-apocalyptic deal, do you think it was more going to be kind of like Divergent or something?
Definitely between those, more towards Divergent, but I didn't research too much about what it was because I kind of wanted to go in and feel it out and see what it would be, what it could become before I set my own expectations of what I hope it would be or something, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So I didn't go in with expectations high or low. I just kind of went into it like, all right, let's see what this is about, which I think you need to do if you want to enjoy this.
Yeah, because I pretty much did the same thing. I saw the trailer, was interested in it. I like when, you know, things go bad type movies and, and so, yeah, that was kind of my same thing, but I also try to avoid any kind of any other additional information on it. So
it does have Kat Graham, and I do adore her because she was a great actress. I know it's going to sound really childish, but in Vampire Diaries, she played Bonnie, and she's a really good actress though. So I was excited to see what she was going to do beyond that show and something with Netflix. It seemed like it was going to be pretty decent.
Gotcha. Well, what was your biggest gripe with it?
The story. the movie. Okay.
The movie.
The movie was such a problem with itself.
I still liked the movie, and I should preface everything I'm going to say with that. It wasn't anything that will rumble the earth for you. It's just...
Ooh, I see what you did there.
Yeah. Mm. It's a movie that you can sit down with some popcorn and maybe like a couple family members or friends or something and just watch it at home under a blanket on like a Friday or Saturday night or something. But if you go into it expecting the story to be even remotely substantial, it's not. It's basically just the backdrop that they needed to use so they could actually have a movie going where they could have action sequences, and I mean, really, that's it. it was really just a way for them to move across the country and have an action sequence every few minutes.
Yeah, there were, I mean, for me, there was a lot of things that didn't really make sense. You know, you're from the aspect of, well, I don't want to get into, actually, there was a couple of actions that were taken that I just kind of scratched my head and go, why would a father do this or a husband do that? Or this makes no sense. Why?
They had a couple of continuity issues too. My favorite being the fact that they're supposed to, I mean, this is in the trailer, they're going from one part of the country to the other part of the country. And somehow they managed to go like a 6 to 8 hour drive and the sun hasn't shifted at all in the Midwest. Like not even a little bit. They've somehow managed to go across a few state lines and it's like a 30-second increment where they're, and it looks the exact same, but then you see a state sign and you're like, wait, what? Now we're here? How did that happen? I mean, stuff like that was ridiculous.
Yeah, it was kind of overall kind of a letdown too, because it was one that I, as a whole, I kind of enjoyed it, but it was, there was some gripes with it. For me, the worst part was the ending. It was almost like you had a, kind of to your point where you had all these different events, you had all these different little trials or tribulations throughout the couple hours here. And in the movie, it's like they condensed a 10-hour series into under 2 hours, but then left off like the last two episodes.
It's,
you know, or the last two episodes worth of information, because there's action up till the very end and then it just stops.
Yeah, the ending will be the most controversial part of this movie, because if you need answers, if you need a resolution, this won't be for you at all.
Right.
If you're somebody who can accept it for what it is and, I don't know, use your imagination and the context of the story that you are given and this really weird progression of storyline, then you might enjoy it. You can enjoy it for what it is. There are a couple moments when Theo actually kind of reminds me of Paul Walker from Fast and the Furious. So some of that stuff is just fun.
Okay, I missed that, but all right.
So I'll give you the scene.
What would you, on the scale of Fast and Furious 1 to 10, what score would you give it?
I mean, it's still Tokyo Drift. Don't get me wrong, but it's a little different. I gave it, if the full price of admission is $10, I gave it 5.
That's exactly what I give it also. It had enough entertainment factor to it. But man, that last couple of minutes of the movie just really dropped the score. So
we got 2 5s and 1's free on Netflix. Which one are you going to watch, people?
True that.
I'm sorry, it's not free. You pay $13 a month or whatever you pay. So, hey.
You've made your money back with those TV shows you binge.
Yeah, it's true. That's true. All right, so let's go to new releases, Brian.
All right. Well, all of these movies will be released on July 20th, either on the big screen or video on demand. First off, we got Denzel is back as Robert McCall, making things all even in The Equalizer 2. The sequel no one is clamoring for, Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, discos its way for a likely short stint on the big screen prior to going straight to the $5 bin at Best Buy. From the home of disappointment cinema, Blumhouse Productions, Unfriended Dark Web guarantees the goriest movie from them to date. Okay.
Golf clap. For that one.
You're right. Yeah. So on the video on demand front, we've got Broken Star, which is about a girl that's a danger to herself. But when she's sequestered in her house, her landlord may even be worse. And lastly, dropping on Netflix is what might be David Spade's best role since Joe Dirt in Father of the Year, as he plays a deadbeat dad, which is pretty much Joe Dirt grown up. He's pitted against his son's best friend's father, if you can stay with that, in a my dad can beat up your dad fight. And that really about sums it up.
Wow, yeah. You really sold us on those.
Yeah, well, there we go. That's a collection right there. Me personally, the only one I'm really excited for is Equalizer 2. I love the first one. Like, I love it. Legitimately love that movie. And I like it more every time I watch it. Which, well, I guess I liked it originally, so that means I love it now. I don't know where logistics are, but I really dig that movie and I want to see a second one, so I'm going to that. The rest of them look like garbage. I don't want to see it. David Spade's movie, You Couldn't Pay Me, Mamma Mia. I didn't even make it through the first one, so I'm sure that's for an audience. That doesn't mean Unfriended Dark Web. I saw that movie already. It was called Unfriended.
Good. Yeah, the Unfriended movie looks atrocious. But I can't believe I'm going to say this. I am going to see Mamma Mia 2. It has Lily James in it.
That's the only thing I like about that movie.
I legitimately watched the first one a couple weeks ago just so I could see the second one with her. And it was hard to get through the first one.
Do you like
one.
The first one?
No. Isn't I like the songs. I mean, I can see.
Isn't her mom basically like a, she just, she's a hoe or whatever?
The whole plot of the first one is Amanda Seyfried, however you say her name. Mm-hmm. She's trying to figure out which of these three dudes is her father because her mom doesn't know. So she doesn't really know.
Mom had a bad month, huh?
But all of them end up coming to her wedding.
That's what ABBA does to you.
That's what the first one is. But then they have random songs. It's a really, really weird placement of musical. Ugh, anyway.
So what's your pick?
I'm going to see The Equalizer for sure. And that's one I'm actually excited about. But Broken Star doesn't look half bad.
No, it doesn't look bad.
It looks like a decent on-demand rental. Brian, where do you stand?
With a book? Sounds like.
I mean, Equalizer for me is the easy one to pick. I got to admit, at the Father of the Year trailer, there was a couple of parts where I chuckled. I'm sorry, the scenes where he's being sloshed back and forth in that bed of a truck that's turned into a swimming pool, and he's dumped out butt naked on the ground. I actually laughed.
It's not a bad trailer at all, but it's not going to be a great movie. I'm
if
sure.
You're a Joe Dirt fan, you're probably going to
it's like McDonald's. You know you're going to feel like crap after you eat it, right? But you eat it anyway.
That's a fair analogy.
You know you're going to regret yourself for having watched, and you're going to have to, and once you start it, you're going to have to finish it. Otherwise, it's going to stay on that continue watching.
And
you'll constantly stare at it for the rest of your life.
So it's the McDonald's of David Spade movies. Let's just start rating movies on fast food.
I'm with that.
Okay, well, now we're going to move on to our From the Outside In topic. Man, this is about vigilantes. I said vigilantes. I don't know why I said that, but vigilantes. So let's define what a vigilante is first, because some people do confuse vigilante with assassin. Which I guess is fair. That's a fair comparison. Mm-hmm. Any person who takes the law into his or her own hands as by avenging a crime. That's the actual definition of a vigilante. So when you mention the word, a few names immediately pop into mind. Batman, like we talked about, The Bride, Paul Kersey from the Death Wish movies. I'm talking about the real Death Wish movies, not the recent garbage. Equalizer, obviously. Film vaults are stock full of men and women who have been wrong for one reason or another and chose to journey outside of the law to avenge those wrongs, to right them, so to speak. Yet, in the scheme of things, the facts are simple. These people are criminals. They are breaking the law. They are doing something illegal. So we're going to just discuss why we love criminals like these and where we stand on their brand of justice. So first up, do you believe vigilantes are fundamentally justified?
I mean, generally, yeah.
And we're talking movie vigilantes. Obviously, we don't necessarily mean the real people
on the
streets.
We're not condoning you to go out there and conduct criminal crimes.
Don't hurt anyone unless they do something really bad. Don't hurt anyone. It's bad for you. So, Amanda, what do you think? Are they fundamentally justified in movies?
Yeah, I mean, generally. Typically, a vigilante is doing their thing. And the reason they're doing their thing is because the government is corrupt or perpetually not doing what they should be doing. So the vigilante feels like they need to step in, that they have the ability to take care of something, so they feel an obligation to do so. But they aren't doing those things to benefit themselves. They're doing it for others. And so for me, that's what makes it, in a film, justifiable, is because they're not doing it for selfish reasons. They're doing it.
Well, they're kind of doing it for selfish reasons.
The majority of them are doing, I mean, I shouldn't say majority. A lot of times they see the benefit. Even if it was because they were wronged, sometimes it's because they don't want anyone else to be wronged the way they were. So for me, that makes it more justifiable. When it's just a selfish reason, like, I'm going to get back at you because my ego is hurt, then it's kind of slanted from there. But I mean, what about you guys? Am I alone in that thought?
Yeah, I mean, I separate them from the revenge seekers, the assassins, the mercenaries. This is just people that are that see a bigger problem. And again, it's not a this person killed my parents type of thing or my wife. This is just this neighborhood needs to be cleaned up and the police are too scared to do something. Somebody's got to fix this. I got the skills. I'll take care of it. So I'm fine with it. I'm fine with, I've always, I guess, kind of been fine with the vigilante thing. The problem is the implementation of it. You have to have rules whenever you're doing it. You have to have a code or there must be a line that you will not cross.
Yeah. So what about
once you cross that line, it gets easier to justify pushing that line further and further back.
So what about in circumstances like, say, Paul Kersey from Death Wish? And I know a lot of people haven't seen those movies because they're pretty old. But he goes after gang members. Originally started with his wife being victimized, and then he goes after gang members after that. So they're not all savage murderers. Not everybody in a gang is a savage murderer. So, but a lot of them find themselves just as dead. Are you okay with the casualties when this happens in movies? Because, hey, you were part of that action. It's kind of on you, man. Or do you feel like, man, that's where you went to? Or is that the line you were talking about?
Well, it really depends on the character and everything. So, but the other side of that coin is if this person is in the same gang that did some wrongs or that's terrorizing the neighborhood, sure, they might not have committed a specific act that was witnessed. But you know what? You're wearing their colors or their patches or whatever the case is. You're part of them. You got some bad timing because I just walked down your alley.
If you didn't do anything to stop it or prevent it, that aren't you innately part of that? Aren't you?
But are you just as guilty? I mean, of murder. If you're afraid of being killed. You know, there are gang members. I'm sure that people that join because of circumstance and whatnot.
I feel like you can feel. I don't think you.
I mean, as a vigilante, that is cleaning house, whether it's a neighborhood or a full city or a state or whatever, you're not asking them, you're not interviewing, you're not triaging the different bad guys. You're a bad guy. You, for whatever reasons, again, your affiliation, just by looking at you, I can tell you are affiliated with a certain crime syndicate and you need to be removed from the system. Now, you know, if the person's begging for mercy or saying they'll leave town or something and you still kill them, sure, that's probably one of those lines that shouldn't be crossed. But if you're associated with the quote unquote bad guys in a movie, that's part of the risk you take.
I was going to say that kind of goes with the gig. I mean, you have to, if you're in a...
If there's a vigilante coming after your gang, well, I guess I'm dead.
Or the police, like, just because you...
Throw your colors at them?
Just because you weren't the one who murdered someone doesn't mean the police aren't going to arrest you for having your affiliation with them. So at what point is it any different when a vigilante is the one who's coming after them?
And you don't necessarily have to kill all of them. You know?
Just maim a few.
If he's just, all right, hey, this guy, you know what, he's for whatever reason, I think I can get information out of this guy. I might break a finger. I might, you know, light the hairs on his, you know, light his arm on fire or something, make him talk, waterboard him, whatever. But yeah, a little bit of a, you know, you don't have to kill all of them.
Does it ever concern you guys when you're watching these movies? And so let's say a gang or a couple people in a gang kill somebody's wife or kill somebody in the neighborhood. And then a vigilante takes off after that and they start killing people, right? Does it ever concern you that we are applauding that? Is there anything wrong with that? Or is that just a cathartic release because we wish we could do something to those savages ourselves in the real world? So it's kind of like cathartic.
I think there are a lot of people that feel that a certain amount of justice has not been doled out on their behalf. And so I think that is tapping into a maybe not quite even a subconscious, maybe a conscious part that says, you know what, hey, I wish this, you know, somebody could have done this in my situation. Or, you know what, this is, I wish somebody in my neighborhood would pick up that stick and just start cleaning house, whatever the case is. So, yeah, I think I think a lot of people can kind of associate with that. And I also think it is kind of probably a negative blight on our society as a country, is that, you know, it's just another one of those aspects of violence that we embrace that other cultures, other countries don't tend to.
Yeah, I mean, if we're talking in a real life situation, I certainly don't think that an eye for an eye is justifiable in my own personal opinion, because I don't really think that any of us have the ability to determine who lives or dies and to condemn someone who has made that decision by making that decision ourselves. We're just being hypocritical. But in the same token, when it comes to a movie, the reason people typically seem to immerse themselves into that storyline of a vigilante and kind of root for them is because I think a lot of people have seen either firsthand or, you know, through somebody else, like a third party, where someone's been hurt or, you know, they've been taken advantage of or something bad has happened to them and they've seen that person get away. And to be able to watch somebody on screen actually take care of it and get justice for, you know, whomever was wronged in the movie, it helps them to feel a little bit better that there are people who care about trying to get justice in whatever respect. Because in society, it might not necessarily be that you want that person to die. I mean, you might have those emotions, but even just getting sentenced doesn't always happen. So to be able to watch a vigilante take care of something on screen, while you might not condone it in real life, you're at least getting that release out through your movie experience.
So what does it take for you to side with their violent actions, Brian? Like, what does it take? And a side question, in the real world, if you saw a vigilante, would you applaud them then? Or would you go, okay, now it's too far. I like it in my entertainment, not necessarily on the subway.
Wow. I think as far as what does it take for me to side with their actions? I mean, it's about whatever their mission or their crusade is. So I don't think that, I mean, it's hard to say specifically, because I think it's a broad spectrum there. And unfortunately you have to, if you are going to go that route, yeah, you kind of have to walk a fine line between what's justice and what's assault, what's murder, what's, you know, whatever the case is. So, and as far as in the real world, yeah, I mean, I'm on a subway and somebody's picking on a couple of kids or whatever, and a couple of army vets or something stand up and beat the crap out of these punks and run them off the train. Yeah, I'm gonna applaud them.
All right.
You know, just, you know, vigilantism isn't just killing.
True.
It's not just killing. So, yeah. So they do something like that. Absolutely. Yeah, I'm going to cheer them on. You know, now if somebody cracks open a beer on that train and somebody else tells them that you're not supposed to be drinking on this train, and then the person smarts off, and then the person, you know, who's trying to be the hall monitor basically breaks out a gun and shoots them. No, that's a bit too far.
Yeah, that's a little extreme.
It's a little extreme. Thanks, so I'm probably scenario. Not going to applaud them.
That's frowned upon, even in the subway, street, wherever you're at. It's bad, bad form. Bad form. And also a party killer. Like, seriously, just let him have some fun. He's on the subway. He's not driving. Amanda, what about you? What's it take?
It has to be justifiable. And for that to happen, I guess I have to have an understanding not only of what their intentions or mission, as Brian said, are, but also what is your moral code? Do you have a line where you're like, no, I'm not going to do this? Or does everything go for you? Because if everything goes for you, if you don't have some sort of stopping point within yourself, then I don't really feel like you're doing it for the right reasons. I feel like you're just an angry person and you're trying to find an excuse to be able to act out on that. So if you're a hero per se, and you just step in when you feel like it needs to be stepped and you're trying to save somebody's life, or you're trying to help them, or you're trying to stop some sort of corruption that isn't being stopped, I feel like I'm totally going to be on your side. And in real life, I'm not going to stop that person. Do you need any help? Like, is there anything I can do? Do you need a water or, you know?
Refreshment?
Yeah.
Then get back out there?
Yeah. What can I do for you? But when it comes to murder, you have to have a really good reason of why you couldn't find another means of dealing with that. When it comes to, for example, our superhero vigilantes, they don't automatically just go kill people. They try to find another resolution, and worst case,
you're the Punisher.
Unless you're the Punisher. But in most cases, they're going to try to find a resolution that doesn't result in the ending of somebody's life. So, I mean, I guess that's kind of where I side with them.
What about in real life? Would you be all you're same as Brian?
Yeah. Oh. I mean, hell yeah. If you're beating somebody up, now I may end up like cringing or turning my head because I can't watch boxing even without getting really sad about
it. I'm going to have to turn around and watch and hear your ass getting beat.
No, I mean, I might be like, okay, that's enough. You could probably stop now. Like, don't hurt them that badly. Just kind of rough them up, teach them a lesson, I guess. But I don't know. Sometimes it seems like, and it's really sad, it seems like violent people only respond to violence. And I don't know what that is, why that is. I don't have an alternative, though. So if the only thing that's going to break up a fight is somebody holding on to that person or fighting them off of somebody else, what else are you going to do?
Yeah, I wish more movies would look at that a little bit more from a truly psychological perspective, as opposed to just like, hey, it's always cool. I mean, just really, really get into it, because I think there's some cool, interesting stuff there. For me, in terms of in movies and TV, when they have me on their side is as soon as they've really probably killed or horribly hurt someone in any way, then I'm kind of, it doesn't take me much, really. It doesn't. Like, I'm automatically slanted toward the vigilante. You know, as soon as I see them, I'm like, hey, guess what? This guy, like, killed 47 people last week, but they were all bad. I'm like, all right, I get it.
Yeah.
I didn't even have to see the backstory.
They have a justifiable reason.
Yeah.
They're taking out one person to save how many other lives when they already took 47?
But I have to have a reason. I have to have, like, they're... And we're going to talk about that. And actually, we'll just go ahead and segue there. So when, for the ones you do side with, like the vigilantes that you love in movies and TV and stuff, when do they or could they actually lose you?
Okay, so I already talked about how I feel like they need to have a moral code or a moral compass.
Mm-hmm.
When they break from that, or they lose focus of what their original intentions were, or they become so selfish and one-sided that they can't see past... They get caught up in it. I've seen numerous movies where the vigilante starts off doing it in a very humane way, I guess, per se. And they're doing it with a good reason and good intentions. And then somehow they've twisted and they just keep going. They don't know how to stop themselves. That's when you lose me, because you had me until you lost yourself.
Now, let me ask you, you're saying that Stefan in our Facebook group, because we always put the topic out, and then sometimes people ask, and we ask them, you know, like your favorite vigilantes and thoughts on vigilantes. And he specifically said Dexter. And I know you love Dexter.
I do.
So my question is, did you support him as a vigilante? Or I get you love the show and everything, but did you support him as a vigilante, or was that too far, just a cool character?
He was great on screen. He was really interesting to watch. And, you know, I love the show. But in terms of strictly looking at him as a vigilante, he lost himself. He is one of those people where you started to kind of turn your head like, is it really necessary for you to do this? Could you maybe have found a different way? Dexter ended up getting caught up, not continuously and not every time, but there were times where he got so wrapped up in wanting to kill and just feeding that inner desire that he would go out and seek a bad person just so he could fulfill his inner desires and needs. And that's a selfish-based reason. You didn't happen to come across it. You weren't put in the situation where you were subjected to it. You were intentionally going out and you used your vigilanteism, if that's a word, as an excuse to fulfill your inner desires. That's pretty selfish. I mean, if you look at it that way, but I still love the show. I mean, it was still a great show, except for the last season.
I liked the last season. I don't care anybody says. So what about you, Brian? When do they lose you? Can they lose you?
Yeah, it's really the same thing. It's whenever that line goes from a hard line that you won't cross, to, well, I'm just, well, just this one time, or just, or there's some rationale that I can step over the line this time. And then that line becomes blurry, or that line gets moved back. And that's really what it boils down to. Then, you know, it's, you know, Hugh Jackman really played a, for the most part, a vigilante in Prisoners. Mm-hmm. And he's really a good example of the bad version of a vigilante in this movie. So that's kind of that blind pursuit of, I don't care. I'm not willing to listen to anything. I've got it in my mind. These are my thoughts on the matter. And no matter what, this person is responsible, or these people are responsible. And I'm just going to take them out, and I'm not going to listen to anybody, because I'm super focused on these people, and I'm just not going to listen to anything else. You know, can't be like that. So that's kind of where you lose my support.
My big one, and this is what I was alluding to a few minutes ago, is when innocent people get hurt. When you have a vigilante and they're kicking ass, they're taking names, they're cleaning up the neighborhood, they're cleaning up the Slovakian government or whatever random name that they make up for some kind of national.
Isn't it Slovakian?
No, I'm just making up a name.
Oh, okay. But I think it's a real one.
No, that one's definitely not a real one. But
wasn't that in the Avengers?
It was close to it. Sokovia. That's Sokovia. So when innocent people get hurt, whenever there are innocent people that either get hurt or killed because of their actions, because they're going after them, that makes it really hard for me to stay on board. It really, really does.
But what if they feel regretful, or they feel guilty? Does that change it for you?
Well, I feel sad that I killed this poor old lady or got her killed, but that doesn't make it any different. She's still dead.
So do they still lose your support, though, if it wasn't an intention?
They can gain it back, because Punisher is a victim of this. He hurts innocent people all the time. You know, they get caught up in his wake. But it doesn't necessarily – I don't necessarily love the characters anymore, but I enjoy watching them. But they've lost me in terms of their plight. Because I'm like, mm-hmm. Okay. Now, before I could stand behind what you were doing, I'm like, all right, I get it. But as soon as someone innocent gets hurt, I'm like, you lost me. I still love you, but I just don't enjoy you. I don't stand behind what you're saying anymore.
That's fair. That's
all right. So now we're going to talk about something fun. What's the most unnerving thing you've seen a vigilante do? As in, you couldn't believe they went that far. Maybe it even freaked you out, whatever.
This was a little hard for me, but the one thing I kind of kept coming back to was, and it really, the scene itself is not exactly a whole lot of violent or bloody. Nobody died, I don't think, but it was Michael Douglas as the very disgruntled William Foster in Falling Down, mm-hmm. where he just, there's a lot of things he's finally just had enough. And if you've seen the movie, he just leaves his car parked in traffic and just walks off. But it was the scene where he's in the Korean store and just goes off on the store owner, beats him up. He just starts demolishing the place. And, you know, that was kind of that turning point in the movie where you've kind of been on his side. Everybody's had the frustrations with traffic and all these little things, and you're kind of like, all right, this guy is actually kind of doing some things I wish I had the backbone to do. But that was kind of like the, whoa, pump the brakes a bit there, Home Skillet. It's now you're just being an a-hole. So,
yeah, yeah. That's a tough one to watch, because you are kind of, I don't want to say you're behind him, because his plight's kind of just losing his mind, but there is a good 30, 40 minutes where you're like, all right, I get where he's coming from. And he's hitting like every major stereotype.
Right.
You've ever encountered. And you're sitting there going, all right, I could kind of, you know, it's horrible, but I kind of get it. And then you get to that one moment and you just can't do it anymore. Okay.
Right.
I'm done. That's too far. You've become a racist. And then I think he goes after the gay people too, right? It's just,
yeah,
everything escalates and it gets worse and worse and worse.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's one of those, I guess, typical paths where the vigilante that, you know, is the one thing he's kind of fighting against is actually the one thing that he is. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, that's a good one. All right, what about you, man? What's the furthest, most unnerving thing you've seen a vigilante do?
Oh, man. Okay. So strap in, boys.
Okay.
So
rather be strapped in than never mind.
Strapped on.
I don't know where you were going with that, but yeah, I don't necessarily want to.
So in I Spit on Your Grave.
I knew this is the movie you're going to pick.
This was the easiest question. The entire format. So in I Spit on Your Grave, the last portion of the movie where she's getting her revenge because she was raped, she bends one of her rapists over a table, ties his hands behind his back. He's got blood all over his face because mm-hmm. she's kind of been beating him up for a while. She shoves a gun all the way up his ass, continues to, like, pull it out and put it back in and pull it out.
As you do.
Right. She basically violates him the way that she felt she was violated. And the final sequence is where she sets up this little trap. It's not really a little trap. She sets up this trap where, with the gun still up his bum, and the other rapist, Matthew, across from the original one, and the string is attached to Matthew, who's sitting in a chair. And so when he wakes up, the string pulls the trigger on the gun, shoots the gun through the dude's butt, through his mouth, and across to Matthew, which means he has like
eight. He got a poo bullet.
He did. And they both die from that. Killing them both.
That's like dying from a gunshot wound and dysentery or something.
Ugh. It is super, super brutal. I did not expect that at all. 100% was like...
Well, thanks for getting the explicit tag for this episode. Good job.
You are welcome. Yeah.
That's an Irving. I'll give you that. That's an Irving.
If you haven't
seen it. So kids, if you're looking for a fun family film this weekend, I Spit on Your Grave. It's got it wrapped up for you. And then you can watch Frozen.
Sing-along version.
Clean it up a little bit. Yeah. Wow. Okay. Well, I'm just moving on from that because I am even grossed out.
Bring it up. You're going to bring this.
I need a shower now, all of a sudden.
Yeah. Suddenly I need to shower. Well, mine is actually far less dramatic than that was. It's really simple. Everybody knows the scene. Liam Neeson in Taken, when he rams the nails into that guy's kneecaps. That is, I scream like a virgin on prom night. I was just like, that's what I did.
We've all banged our knee on something and just wanted to cry like a little child. And but to have something that brutal kind of punch through there is, it's a whole other level.
Right, because you're watching the movie and you're like, he's not going to do anything else. I mean, it's going to be one of those interrogation scenes where he just, you know, we'll see where this goes and he'll end up threatening him and nothing will happen. Nope, he's going right for it. He's actually... This guy's jamming nails in kneecaps. He's shooting women. He does not care. So
I don't even like going to the doctor and having them test my reflexes with hitting my knee. No less imagining having nails go through it. Ugh.
It's brutal. It's a brutal scene. But he talked, so now I got a tip, you know?
Who needs waterboarding when you have nails?
Exactly. All right, so who is... your perfect vigilante, movie or TV, your perfect vigilante. Like, this is everything you love about vigilante justice, I guess.
Golly, there's so many. And I tried to stay away from the comic book stuff, just mainly because they're almost too easy. Because Batman, if you include them, Batman is just the ultimate vigilante. But I tried to stay something a little bit more grounded, a little bit more real, somewhat realistic. And that was actually Clint Eastwood in Gran Torino.
Get off my lawn.
Yeah, because, you know, spoiler alert, just, you know, it's been a little while since the movie's come out. But, it's basically he sets it up to where he gives his life and he tricks the gang into killing him. But he sets it up into a sense where the whole neighborhood is watching. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he basically cleaned up the neighborhood. He sacrificed himself for the neighborhood, cleaned the streets, had the, you know, once they killed him, everybody, there was all the witnesses and the cops arrested all the bad guys. It was kind of one of those higher level thinking type deals.
I agree. That's actually a really good one because that's a movie I think that it doesn't get appreciated as much as I would like it to, but really well done, actually. And I think Clint Eastwood gave a great performance, even though he's really just being an amplified version of himself in his previous roles. It's still a great, Great performance. Amanda, who's your favorite, or I'm sorry, your perfect vigilante, film or TV?
So in the last question, remember how I said that was the easiest one on this format? Mm-hmm. I lied. I was wrong. This is the easiest one.
Okay.
Hands down, the easiest question you could have given me. Boondock Saints, the McManus brothers.
Really?
Yes. 100%.
Because they kill a cat?
They don't mean to. They feel a little guilty, but then they laugh.
I'm still okay with it. No, I'm not. Cats are cool.
They, I'm keeping that forever.
It's not true. I don't like cats.
They still have a code. They get into it kind of more as just like a defense mechanism, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then they're kind of like, we're actually pretty good at this. I mean, why don't we keep doing it? But when you reach the end of the movie and they're in the courtroom and they have the guns pointed at the man who they think is going to get away, basically, because, I mean, it is a courtroom and this is America. And they start to talk about how we don't want your women, we don't want your children, we don't want your poor or your hungry. We just want the bad people. That's all we care about. We're not going to hurt anybody else here. Mm-hmm. Just let us do our thing and we're out. And even really gay Willem Dafoe understands that. He recognizes that as a cop with the most hilarious
weird
dialogue.
Weird that had to be mentioned, but okay.
Because yeah. He smacks a dude at it's yeah, anyway, it's ridiculous.
I gotcha.
Anyway, so there are other characters in the movie that recognize their efforts and what their code is and what their mission is. And I can 100% stand behind that because they don't want to hurt anybody else that doesn't need to be hurt. They're not going to. They make it known that this is our platform. We are just doing it to get rid of the bad people. That's it. They don't want anything out of it. They could go and rob a bank and take all of this money. And instead, they use their efforts to protect Boston. I love them.
All right.
Shepherds we shall be.
We got it. I got it. That's a good. I love that movie. So even though I know people will often say it's not really a good movie. Well, you know
they're
what?
Wrong.
You'd be surprised how many movies people love are not really that good. So the characters were great. All right. Well, my pick is from a property nobody knows. Sadly, I'm the only one that knows it. Brian, you've heard me talk about this show before many times. But if you've never heard me mention it, Mr. Chapel from Vengeance Unlimited is my favorite vigilante in film or TV of all time. It ran on ABC for, I think it was just 16 or 18 episodes for one season. It starred Michael Madsen as this guy who would help people who've been screwed over. And they either, at the end of the mission or the end of his work, they either owed him a favor, usually to help somebody else down the line, or $1 million, one or the other. And believe it or not, every once in a while he would get $1 million. So it's kind of interesting. But the reason why he's my favorite vigilante is because he never used violence, ever. He used manipulation the entire time. What his mission was, or what he chose to do for his vigilante efforts was, for example, one person killed someone's husband. And so what he did is he rounded up a cadaver and he played with the circumstances and basically set it up, framing the original killer for someone else's murder. So he set it up so that they still got framed for the same thing. Mm. They were punished in a different way. They were caught for something else because he didn't want them to go free. For somebody who stole other people's money, he would set it up so that they lost all their money. You know, you see what I'm saying. That's how the show was set up, and that's what Mr. Chapel did. Not violent, but still breaking the law to fix where the law failed in many respects. And I just love the psychological madness of it because he was also kind of nutty. He's Michael Madsen at his prime. So it was like watching Mr. Blonde from Reservoir Dogs, be the good guy. Mm. And it was insane. I loved it. I loved that show. Like, I was so mad. It was at least 15 to 20 years ahead of its time because antiheroes were not a thing then. Everything had to be Kirk Cameron-esque and stuff. Man, it was a great show. He was a great vigilante and the kind I want. I would want to hang out with him just to see how his brain ticked.
You should plug that to some execs and see if they will. They love reboots right now.
Yeah, well, usually they only reboot stuff people know, and nobody knows that but me and my brother Brad, I think.
But you can give it a shot.
You can't even buy them. Like, you can't buy the disc.
What?
My brother had to find them on the internet somewhere so I can watch them again.
Fine.
He found them. The internet holds no secrets.
Legally, of course.
I'm sure you found him in that Jason Blum dark web nonsense. All right. Well, those are all really good choices. I think that was a really good conversation. But we do have some listener thoughts. I kind of want to let a few of them weigh in. Brian Lowry, you know, in terms of why we love vigilantes, we love them because we want to feel like if something bad happened to us, someone else would help us, or someone would help us. And let's see, Peter Germany, I think for me, it's wanting to right wrongs. We see so much injustice in the world in most of our lives. We're powerless to do anything about it. I think a lot of people fantasize about going full Punisher or Rorschach on someone every once in a while. Nate Bruce, we like people who try to give people justice and take care of the bad guys where the laws can't. Andrew Jeeves, I love them because they fight the injustice and usually have more resources than what the police have to be there and able to fight crime more effectively. Scott Calgaro, he has an interesting thought. We are very much an eye for an eye species. Most vigilantes aren't out to punish all criminals, Batman notwithstanding. They are out to right a personal wrong, something that was done specifically to them that requires retribution. Most of us can relate to that feeling. If someone we love was taken from us, we would like to be the ones to dispense what we feel is justice, not what the police and courts would allow. And then lastly, Matt Barnes. I think we're drawn to vigilantes because they stand for what's right while avoiding all the societal rules and red tape that us common folk have to adhere to. They operate under their own code and right wrongs the way they see fit. And he mentions his favorite would probably be Harry Callahan from Dirty Harry. And I only mention that because, Brian, you mentioned Clint Eastwood. And I'm kind of curious, do you consider Dirty Harry, who was a cop, a vigilante?
Yes. No different than, just different methods than Dexter.
Hmm. All right.
I just, guess, you know, he just wasn't as good with a scalpel and stuff.
I guess I never really saw that particular character as a vigilante, but that's an interesting perspective.
Yeah, when you think about it, because the laws don't matter to him at all. So when
I mean a little bit.
Barely.
He made sure the guy was armed before he shot him.
I guess so. He covered his bases is what he did. But when you look at it from that perspective, I don't think he's the first one you go and you think of. But when you think of it from the perspective of Matt, where he's talking about, you know, he is that person that we're defining as a vigilante. And he isn't confined by what his occupation is. He will do what he feels is necessary to right those wrongs. And so he totally fits, in my opinion.
All right. Well, I'm going to go watch Dirty Harry in a whole new light, man. Whole new light. But a lot of great thoughts on there. And I think we're all kind of on the same page. It's stuff we wish we could do. We know we can't. So we watch movies so we can enjoy it being done.
Because they got it coming. I'm Batman.
That's a good Batman.
I'm going to do that whenever I see something wrong happen. I'm going to be like, I'm Aaron. And just see if anybody stops committing the crime.
You should just always have a Batman mask. Throw it on real quick and just say, I'm Batman, whenever you see something wrong and see if they, like, run away.
And be like that Bat like Dad on the movies. Internet.
Yes.
Bat Podcaster.
I'm Batcaster.
Oh,
it's
man.
Not what you do that defines you.
Brian, we're closing the show out. Any recent film or TV recommendations we haven't already talked about, like something you watched recently you want to mention?
Yeah. You know what? I think you've got one, so I'll let you have that one. I'll take one. Actually, I mentioned to you the other day, and it's funny because you actually just started watching it. And it's one of the best shows on Netflix that nobody is talking about. And it's Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee.
Yes. Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, so good.
It's hosted by Jerry Seinfeld. He picks up a stand-up comedian that you may or may not have seen in some movies. Probably half of these people they're just stand-ups that you might have seen a special on HBO about 10 years ago or something like that. But some of them are legends. Some of them are newer people. And it is just fantastic. Each episode is only 15 to 17 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, my favorite episode is the last one. It was Jerry Lewis's last televised appearance. And hearing Jerry Lewis talk smack and curse was just mind bending. So it was, and just the stuff that the back and forth with him and Jerry, because they've been friends for a long time, both Jerry's. So it's a fantastic show. And if you like cars at all, there's some neat cars in there, but it's just basically he picks up a comedian in his car. They go have some coffee. They tell some stories. They compare some notes, ask each other some stuff, and yeah, it's pretty good. It's good light show. It's not too heavy, which a lot of the things on my wish list or Q or whatever you want to call it seem to be dark, dark murder mysteries and stuff like that. Dark science fiction, whatever.
That's so good. That show.
It's a good. It's a good palate cleanser.
We started watching that at the same time, actually, and I'm just like, man, I didn't like. You watch so many talk shows and everything else where they have entertainers on, and they are so everything you've heard before in every other interview they've ever done, which is why I don't like watching those interviews very often. These feel very candid, very grounded, very real life discussions, and it's really good. Yeah, really good.
As someone who isn't particularly fond of him, of Jerry Seinfeld, I really enjoy that show. I remember watching the episode, and it's just because it's funny to me, the one with Obama when he was president, because they couldn't leave the like the driveway, basically. So they just kept driving in circles, and they had coffee out. It was hilarious. I couldn't stop laughing at it, and I didn't even really care about the context of the conversation because they just kept looping around. And I'm like, I expected them to actually leave. They go through a gate guard, and they don't go anywhere. It's so
funny. Great. What about you, man? You got any recommendations before we head out?
Totally. So Thoroughbreds is out for you to rent as one of my recommendations. It was in theaters. Now it's out. So you should definitely watch that. You can.
It's got big eyes, Anya Taylor-Joy. And
Olivia Cooke. She's really, really great in it.
Two girls that become friends.
Yeah, they were childhood friends. And now they are basically they're reconnecting for a very peculiar reason.
A dark, dark reason.
Very dark reason. And it's actually Anton Yelchin's last performance. And I cannot say enough good things about that movie. I rewatched it.
It's really good. I just watched it.
Yeah. And were you surprised?
No. I called the ending literally 4 minutes in. But right. I was still really engaged in the movie.
Well, that's good.
I've seen a lot of movies.
So. Yeah. So that one for sure. And then the other one I wanted to mention is, and I've pimped this movie so much, but it is finally on Netflix, and that is All the Queen's Horses, which we talked
that
about
documentary.
Yes, from the Bloyd International Film Festival. So if you're curious about that, you can go back to that episode and listen to it. But that movie is on Netflix, and it is exceptional. So you should totally check that out.
All right, totally.
I was going to say the totally makes me sound like I'm a surfer. You should definitely check that out.
It doesn't. It doesn't.
Totally rad.
No. You're closer.
Oh, okay.
You're closer.
No. Stop while you're behind.
Stop while Thanks you're so behind. Much, Brian.
All right. Well, I'm going to mention two movies. One, not good, but I'll still recommend it. And the other one is really good and shocked the hell out of me. So the first one is not the one Brian thinks I'm going to mention, because I saw Kidnap with Halle Berry, where she spends a whole movie chasing down her child that gets kidnapped. It's on Hulu, so you can see it. It won't cost you anything. It's a dumb, 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 dumb movie, and I really enjoyed it. I couldn't stop watching it. And every time I kept pausing the movie, like every 10 minutes going, there's no way they can keep this going for another hour. Son of a bitch, they sure can. They can't keep it going for another 45 minutes. Son of a bitch, they still can. And it goes all sorts of directions, but it's actually like really fun in a dumb kind of way. It's one of those movies that it's just popcorn. Like,
yeah.
Forget about the logic and just enjoy it.
You're going to yell at the TV for sure watching
that. Oh, yeah, definitely a few times, but I enjoyed it. Now, the other one is, I would dare say, a great movie. Brian, would you agree with that? Do you think it's a great movie?
I would call it great. I really enjoyed it.
Okay, there's a movie.
I'm out of the loop right now.
It's on Netflix, and it's called Caliber. It just came out.
That's by design, Amanda.
Yeah, I know it is, right?
It's called Caliber. It's on Netflix, and I'm going to tell you as little as I can because I don't want to ruin the things that happen and why they happen. But two friends basically get together, and they go to – and one of them used to go hunting with their dad at this remote town. And so they head out there, best buddies. One of them is engaged and has a baby on the way, and the other one is just kind of like this fun-loving friend. That's his dad that used to go hunting. So they go out there. They have some drinks. They have some fun. The next morning, they get up a little early and they go hunting, and something happens that is tragic. Now, it's not so much the tragic thing that happens. It's everything that happens after that fact that becomes fascinating, because the movie is not predictable. It doesn't go in the directions you think it's going to go. And the entire time, you're like, what are they going to do? Like, where's this headed? And I couldn't have guessed where it was headed. If I tried. I do that when I watch movies. I'm trying to guess where it's headed, and I couldn't figure out where it was going. And it ends at the point, there's a specific choice several times that happened throughout the movie. And every single time it caused me to stop and ponder what I would do in those circumstances. Mm. And that, to me, is a great movie.
Also, if it can surprise you and not have you figure it out 4 minutes in, is also
a notable. That's helpful. Brian, anything you want to add to that? Or is there anything I missed? I'm really trying to tell people not to
really,
watch the trailer.
You've really got
to
tiptoe around this. And I was, man, you were given some good details there up till, and I was wondering if you were going to give too much in your little intro thing there. So, yeah, don't waste your time watching the little trailer. Just start it or add it to your wish list and watch this. This is, you probably have to watch it with subtitles. Some of the it's in Scotland. Mm-hmm. There are some really thick accents, and I had to rewind a few times. Finally, I just turned on the subtitles and let it go because there were some words every now and then I was just like, I don't know what they're saying. But it really does really kind of make you think, what would I do? And
it's intense.
It is. It's just, it's got like, it's not like this high level of stress through the whole movie, but if it was a stress on a like 0 to 10, it's probably like a strong 4 mm-hmm. through the whole movie. Of course, there are times when it bumps up to 7 or 8 or something like that. But it's like it doesn't get below 4 like the whole movie. It's just mm-hmm. you're constantly kind of stressed the whole time.
Yeah, it's good. Caliber. So don't watch the trailer. I'm stressing that. Don't watch the trailer. It gives away kind of a pivotal moment. Not the biggest moment, but a pivotal one. So I would avoid it if you could. Caliber on Netflix. Watch it. It's an original film. All right. Well, if you have thoughts on this week's episode, you can email them to feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Remember, you can vote for us at podcastawards.com. The time to vote is coming short, though. So please do that if you could. Join our Facebook group, The Hollywood Outsider. We always put the topic there every week. And we'll also tweet us at @BuyPopcorn. Remember to subscribe and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts has an app now, Stitcher, thehollywoodoutsider.com, or your podcast app of choice. You can hear Brian, Mr. Williams, in all episodes prior to number 239. And he was just on our V episode of Remake This Movie Right, which was a lot of fun. So you can hear that too.
Also, and at what's your website, Brian?
That will be wonderstrucktravel.com.
If you need a vacation, see Brian.
And yes, you do.
Or if you want to go on the whole cruise with us, because we will be there.
There you go.
And space is very, very limited.
Yep. Get on that. Go to Wonderstruck Travel. Brian has pimped it more, I think, than Troy Heinrichs typically pimps himself. Also, you can find Amanda on Smirk and me on Beyond Westworld, which just finished its season 2 with a crossover event, including Jason Kabasi from the Walking Dead cast. One quick mention, Kessel Rock is coming out on Hulu, and our show friend, Wayne Henderson, he's got a new podcast devoted to it called Kessel Rock Zone. So if you like TV companion podcasts, I love Wayne Henderson. You should check it out, Kessel Rock Zone. Brian, thank you for being a last-minute replacement for Mr. Johnny Davenport.
You know, anytime I can help Mr. Dum Dum out, it's just it just makes me feel good. And it was always good to step up to the mic one more time.
And I will say, it's basically John had to hurry up and handle a passport issue because of some travel that he booked through Mr. Brian Williams, WanderstruckTravel.com. And Brian stepped in. That's the kind of service you get from Wanderstruck Travel. You get a guy willing to go on a podcast that he retired from.
That's right. That's right. That is the kind of service that you can expect and the links that this travel agent will go to for you.
And Amanda, thank you for your first official episode as Hollywood Outsider host.
Thank you for showing up, unlike John.
All right, stop talking.
I'm just kidding.
Brian,
whoa!
Do you give her... Look, we let ladies in the clubhouse. Let's calm down. Let's not take over, okay?
Let's back it up. Actually, ladies have taken over a couple of times.
Brian, do you give her a pass? Did she do okay?
I'll move her to the next class so I don't have to deal with her anymore this year.
Whoa. Ouch. You guys are really... aggressive.
You got to learn to suck
this up. It's not because of her skills. It's because I can't take any more. just kidding. No. Did great. Did great, as always. And
it's always good recording with you.
Yeah, just read the notes. You know, read the stuff he gives you. That's, you know.
You're so funny.
Yeah. There's going to be so many notes. Okay, time to head out. Remember the next time you head into a theater, everybody, buy some popcorn.
Are you going to sing it?
No.
You were in a singing mood earlier.
Buy popcorn? Buy some popcorn. Yeah. Wild Wild West.
That was a very weird merging.
Yeah. Don't lose yourself in the popcorn.
Well, first of all, let's start with what this is even about, because it looks a little ridiculous.
That's your job.
I know. That's why I'm asking you.
No, that's your job to say what the movie's about.
Oh, I thought I had to ask you and you respond.
No, you have to actually say what the movie's about and then ask the questions.
Oh, okay. I misunderstood.
It's not like you haven't done this before or listened to a podcast.
I haven't done this part before. I've never done the reviewing thing. Let's go look up what the fuck this is, because I didn't watch it.
Wow. This is some Justin McCumber shit right here.